Okay, dann läuft jetzt die Aufzeichnung und dann würde ich jetzt einfach mal direkt reingehen und dann gucken wir mal, wie es läuft. Hello everyone, I'm Mika Heinen. I'm here today to talk to Robert Klei. Thank you so much for meeting with me today and talking about the connection between the US of A and Föhr. A small island in the north of Germany, which has a rich history, for the connection between the US and Germany. So that's why we're here to talk today. And Robert, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you, Nike. My name is Robert Klei. I'm the chairman of the Föhring Foundation, which is a small foundation for cultural issues and the language of the Isle of Föhr. Föhr is close to the Danish border. It's a small island, and the people here originally spoke Frisian to each other. They do speak Frisian today. It's still alive, this little minority language. And this is very unique. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Could you briefly describe the history and purpose of the Faring Foundation a little more in depth?
Yeah, we are founded from Frederick Paulsen, which was a medicine man from Föhr, who studied in Kiel during the 1930 years. And he made leaflets at the university against the Nazis. So they found him and he was imprisoned in Neumünster. And after 2 years, he decided, when he was free, he decided to go to study abroad in Switzerland first and then to Denmark, I guess. And then he went to Sweden because Sweden was not involved in the war. And there he worked as a medicine man or a doctor. And he made research and he found something out about peptides. And he was founder of a little pharmaceutical institution, which he called Ferring, after the name of the language from the Isle of Föhr. And after, I guess, 20, 30 years, when he retired, he came back to Föhr, where he was very interested in the culture, the history of Föhr in the language, and he was very he want to reunite the connection between the Frisian people, because Frisian people are living in the coast areas of the Netherlands and northern Germany, and he want to reunite them. That's a context between the Frisian people after the World War were still alive, the cultural contact between these people. And this was very important for him. And 1988, he founded the Ferring Foundation on Föhr, which is named after his medicine institute, Ferring, but also meant the Frisian culture and language. And our aim is to preserve the Frisian language, to make, for example, school books, to make podcasts, music in Frisian, to make books in Frisian, so the Frisian language could survive, you can say. And we support the Frisian language and culture still today.
Thank you. So today we're talking in between. I'm currently in Washington, D.C., and you are in Alcosum right now, I think, right?
Yes.
What's the connection between the US and Fur? Like, how did this come together?
There is a very, very big connection still today, because we had a huge number of migration from Föhr, or from the whole area of Nordfriesland, North Frisia, maybe you can translate it so, and the US. Because North Frisia, it's at the west coast in Germany. It's very rural, or it was very rural. You had some farms in marshlands, huge number of children, not so good economical possibilities, and all the children have to leave the farms very early on. So they went to fishing after whales in the northern Greenland areas. But later on in the 19th century, when the whaling time was more or less over, so maybe you know it from, I think, Nantucket is, I think, the whale fishing island of former times of the US. So Föhr, Amrum, and Sylt, the so-called North Frisian Islands, where the huge of very big whale fishing islands in Germany. The people had to leave, and they went abroad to the US. And a huge number of them came to New York, and they, yeah, stayed there and yeah, made little communities.
Okay. So can you tell me a little more about the circumstances? You already said that there were a lot of children who had to like leave the farms and leave to the fishing islands. But could you also talk about the connection to the US? So how did they leave the island?
Yeah, of course. So there are different points. At that time, Föhr was Danish. The whole area of Schleswig-Holstein were Danish. And there was war between Prussia and Denmark, for once. Before that, there was a war between the people from this province of Schleswig-Holstein, because these people felt very German. They want to belong to the Danish central state. And we had in a time from 1848 till around 1870, we had different little wars in this area. So this was one reason. Another reason was the whale fishing time was over, so the people couldn't go with boats to whaling. And in the medicine, we had big success. So more children survived, and this was together like problems, because the people have to left the islands for political reason or for economical reason. And so a lot of Frisian people, not only the islands, the mainland as well, went over to the US. They came to New York. A lot of the Frisian people stayed in New York. I know some Frisian people went to Iowa, to this area around Chicago, and some Frisian people from the eastern part of the island, they went to Petaluma. It's a little city north of San Francisco in California. So these are the three most bigger places the Frisian people went to. And very interesting is that we can still today connect the connection between Föhr and the US, because the Frisian people from Föhr, they stayed very, very close areas and they stayed together. So I know a lot of Frisian people who went to the area of Iowa. They get lost, so to speak, because we cannot research them still. But in the Föhr Frisian people, they stayed together in little communities. So it's easier for us to look today on these little communities.
Okay, that's so interesting. Thank you. And what was the situation the immigrants found in the US? How did they start a living across the ocean?
It's a very good question. I don't know. I think it began about 1848, 1850. In the beginning, more or less, the whole family immigrated, or a couple which was married emigrated together. They came to New York. They worked in the early 1900th century in the milkman business. I don't know, it was told to me. I cannot look it after, but later on, they were very huge in the deli business. So they had little delicatessen stores where they sold salads, sandwiches, and so on. And it was like a chain migration, so we call it. Like the first families, the first people went over, and later on they wrote letters back home. Of they were maybe in vacation home, and they said it's wonderful. I have good companies, businesses going well, and so more and more of these fur Frisian people came over to New York. And 20 years later, all fur people worked in the deli business. They began maybe as a clerk. Later on, they had their own store. The women were back in the kitchen and had to cook and boil potatoes and make potato salad, for example. The children were in the store, and they had little communities, like a little association. It's called Föhrer Amrumer Krankenunterstützungsverein. So in English, it's Föhr and Amrum sickness, association, or a sickness supporting association. And they had little parties where the people from Föhr on the neighbor island of Amrum, where they met, where they spoke Frisian to each other, where they can feel home. And very interesting, they made business there because this was the big stock exchange market for the Amrum Frisian people, because there they met, they could sell their deli businesses to another one when they want to go home, for example, to Föhr. Or they found the girl or the boy, what they want to marry later on. So this was a very close connection, a very close community, you can say. But they had a very strong connection back home, even in the late 19th century.
Okay, so how did they communicate in between Föhr and New York, let's say? Did they write letters or did they come home every now and then? How was it possible to keep that tight connection going?
They wrote, of course, a lot of letters. It's very interesting because normally they wrote in High German, but the first language of the Fur people were more or less Frisian. Of some, it was Low German. It's like a German, very close connected language to German, to High German. High German, you talk in Bavaria, for example, and in the northern part, you talk more Low German. But maybe this is too linguistically. And Frisian is something, it's very close to Low German and even to English, but it's still different language. So they wrote in High German, because the people, the Fur people in America, they could normally, they spoke normally Frisian at home, English in the store, but they wrote always in High German. Sometimes they went back home for a vacation, or not really vacation, but I don't know, not vacation what we do today, but more like Heimatbesuch. So they went home, and not every year, maybe every 5 years, every 10 years. But then they stayed there for like 4 months or for 6 months. Sometimes we have this very interesting constellation that the children of the Fur Frisian people who immigrated to New York, they came back to connect, to spend time at the house of their fathers and mothers. So this the children raised by the grandparents, for example, there was always a strong connection. This is very interesting to see, and we have a lot of examples. Still in our archive, for example, with this great connection, a lot of letters. We have a menu card from the immigrant boat from this time. So it's very cool to see how strong this connection was and is.
Absolutely. You talked about that some children of farmers came to the US. Were there any certain other occupational groups or like social backgrounds that in particular migrated into the US?
Not really, because fur is still today a very small community, and it's a very, how you can say, a very a community where the people are on the same level, more or less. So we do not have like different kind of status. So other people normally say you to each other. In German, you normally say sie. It's here different still today. So there were more or less on the same level. The most were farmer children or children of captains from the sea. But they began to become store owners, and this is very funny because on fur you had to at this time you hadn't big number of stores, for example. A very interesting other point is other group of these fur people went to Petaluma, as said before, and there they became chicken farmers because Petaluma was to that time the chicken farming city in the US. So there they became chicken farmers, and in New York they were store owners. So it doesn't matter which background they had before. In New York, they were all very on the same level again.
Okay. Is there any historic background you would like to mention that we haven't touched yet?
I think the most interesting point for me is between the wars, or the time for the First World War, and between the wars, and then after the Second World War, because the Frisian migration was there completely different from the German migration. So we had this constellation maybe in the end of the 19th century. A family from Fur went abroad to New York. They became children there, and the children later on went back to Fur. And on Fur, they saw I have no big economic future, so they want to go back to the US. So they switched every 10, 20 years their living point. But because they were born in the US, they were still US citizens and could come back. So this is different, I guess, I think. And especially between the wars, when the German people couldn't migrate because they were Germans, and it was not allowed for German people to went after the wars directly to the US. The Fur Frisian people, they could. And after the Second World War, the same. So the Fur Frisian people, which were the children of immigrants, which were born between the wars, could go directly after the Second World War as US American citizens, could go back to New York. And they had still family over there, so it wasn't that they go to New York and were lost in this big city, because on Föhr to that time lived maybe 5,000 people, so it's a very huge difference. So they could migrate directly after the war, and this was even good for the Föhr people on Föhr, because they got a lot of care packets from the US. So they had fine clothes, they had real coffee, they had chocolate, cigarettes from the US. So there was a little bit more luxurious than in the rest of Germany to that time. And this is, I think, very interesting. So they had, like, every time when the children were old enough, they want to go abroad. And they came back when they had little children, and these little children want to go abroad because of course, they knew all the stories from New York, from the US, and they want to go to see what is over there on the other side of the ocean.
Hey, yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. That is super interesting. Which elements of the Frisian cultures did the Frisian people preserve in the US? What did they keep after they immigrated back and forth?
It's a very interesting question because I think, first of all, the language. So they spoke Frisian in the US, or Low German, not so much High German. And the costume from the women, the traditional costume, it's a very fine dress in black with a silver. I'm not so good in this costume stuff, but with the big silvers here, and it's very very beautiful to see. And even today at the Stäubenparade in New York, the Für Am Roma Krankenunterstützungsverein still existing. I think they're going there every year in the fine costume of the Frisian people. This is, for example, very important for the Frisian people. Traditions, yeah, tradition. What is tradition? This is very interesting, even here, to see what is more German or more Frisian. I think it's different labeled. But it's interesting to see that a lot of Frisian people who went to New York, after a time, they did stuff what they knew from home, and everything was labeled Frisian. Even some German stuff, everything was Frisian. Like the meal, like potatoes and kale, what you normally eat in northern Germany, it was more Frisian for them. And when they came back to Föhr, for example, your question, Nike, what they brought back to Föhr, it's the English language. A lot of Föhr people, even older people, you maybe wouldn't expect it, speaking very good American accent English from the East Coast. This is cool to see because you are maybe thinking, oh, it's an old person. His whole life he or she was on fur. And then you're talking to that person and you see, wow, this person spent more than a half of his life in New York. This is very cool to see. So we have a lot of, a lot, maybe not, but we have some American flags. Which you can see here. Some Frisian people on Föhr still are US citizens and have family over there in New York. And so they couldn't elect for in Germany, but they elect for the US elections. And maybe the most important thing they brought back from New York is the cocktail you maybe know. It's Manhattan. And it's so famous here. So in every bar and every restaurant, at every family meeting, you got a Manhattan with a little cherry in the glass. And you have to drink it. So I'm not from Fur originally. When I came here, I have to learn it, that the Manhattan is a holy thing here on this island.
It's a set of cognac and then red and white vermouth with a Martino cherry, right?
Yeah, or whiskey. I
Yeah,
don't know.
maybe we can put the recipe in as well.
But it's very tasty.
Yeah, are they still like traces or descendants of the Frisian families today, especially like in New York City, do these delis still exist? Are they still present today, or is it like within the second and third generation that they get that they decide to go into another occupation, another work field?
Yes, this is a very good question as well because so if we're thinking the Frisian people came, we have so different like waves of migration. So it was not always from the beginning to the end of the migration that you have continuous high number of migration. It was more like so look, five huge waves. And the last bigger wave was after the Second World War, where the people, which were US citizens, could go back with around 20 years. And they came more or less mostly to the Bronx and to Queens, Brooklyn, and they were the most of the fusion delis. And when they had became when they got children, they moved out from the main city. They moved more out to New Jersey. To a lot of Frisian people moved to this island, this very huge island close to New York. I couldn't remember the name. What is the name?
What is it?
You know it, this huge island with Jonas Beach and all these be fine beaches, the sandy beaches of New York. What is it?
Oh, Long Island.
Long Island. They moved out to Long Island, where they had a more peaceful life, where the children could, where they could better raise the children and so. And there is a little city called Northport. It's about 90 minutes by car from Manhattan. It's to the northern shore. And in this little city, Northport, there is a little part which is called Crab Meadows. And this is later on called Little Föhr or Little Amrum, because on this little city, we had streets and a neighborhood full of Frisian people. There were like 80 Frisian people, which is very, it's a huge number for Föhr, for example, where about 20, 30 little children raised together in one, two, three streets. So the neighborhood was very Frisian. And when they went there, they sold mostly their deli stores, and yeah, made something other, yeah, everything. So it wasn't after the 1970s. It was not more this little, yeah, mafia deli business. It was more you can make your job whatever you want, so to speak. I was in New York for, I think, 10 years, and there was only one deli which was still run by Frisian people, and it
Okay.
was on Long Island. It was called Fering Delicatessen, so it's very yeah, the name is what it is. And I think the rest is more or less they sold it, the shops. Yeah, and today it's not more in this little community is not still existing. So you cannot say, here I live in Frisian people, for example. They are still very good connected to Föhr, and the families are very strong. So a lot of Frisian people from Föhr go in the winter time over to the US to vi visit friends and family, or in the summertime the US Frisian people came back here to Föhr, to visiting Föhr or the families, and a lot of them came, are coming to our foundation to look where other ancestors are from.
Okay, so you get a lot of people who want to look into their history as well, and you can give them a look into the archives, or how do they look into it?
Yeah. Right. So we have in the summertime, also mostly in the summertime, a lot of visitors from the US, and they are looking for houses, ancestors, roots, going to the archive. We have a lot, a huge number of pictures at our archive. We have a picture archive with more than 50,000 old pictures from mostly everybody from this island. Yeah, it's very cool to see how fascinated the America Frisian people are when they came back to see where are my ancestors from. And we had people from Chile, from Australia, from the US. So the first people I think were very good in migrating. So a lot of ancestors are still around in the world.
That's so nice. That's so great that the foundation has the possibility to give them the opportunity to trace back in history and see where they came from. And I think that's really beautiful. So, do you have another example, maybe for me, how the U.S. or different parts of the U.S. Influenced Föhr as well? You mentioned the famous Föhrer Manhattan, which is of course a huge part, but maybe there's like parts of architecture or something else on the island.
No, not really. Frisian people are very traditional people, so I think it's no. No, not really.
Okay. That's interesting. So that's good to know. And is there a story of someone who maybe immigrated or has still family in the US you would like to share, like a little anecdote or something?
Yeah, maybe I can say we made a storytelling podcast, which is called Fur to New York, in last year, I guess. Yeah, last year. And in German and in Frisian. And this year we are just to translating it to English, because we thought this is like a story of a family which had this migration, which and the family was always divided between two wars. And this story, I think it's a very good example for showing how it was. And that mostly everybody from Föhr has in his family migration. So I think it's a very good example to show how was it. Now we are maybe thinking, oh, this is very interesting. You are going to New York and you're in the big city. Yeah, of course it is, but on the other side, I know a story from a family, and this family, they had four daughters. They were had never the opportunity to celebrate Christmas all together, because always one or two were over in New York. Once the father was in New York and he couldn't sell his shop, he want to, because the family was already back on firm, and he wanted to sell the shop, but between the Black Friday stock exchange and the crisis, there wasn't enough money to get a good offer. So he stayed there and he waited over years, and then the oldest daughter come over to help his father, and then there was a war. The Second World War, and those Frisian couldn't go back to Europe. And then the father went over, the daughter stayed there, and though the father died, and so this is a very, yeah, very symbolic story for showing how the real migration was. It wasn't so, yeah, a huge fun, so to speak. But there was always a big connection between Föhr and New York. And if Föhr people went over to New York, they met at all of these Föhr people met at this association. And of course, there was important to tell news from old home. And even the newspaper from Föhr and Amrum, it's a very small newspaper, you can imagine, was still today, I think the printed version went over to New York, and there are some people who still, yeah, getting their newspaper a week later. I don't know, but isn't interesting, because it's they want to have this connection to the island, or in the time where alcohol was forbidden, the prohibition in New York, the Föhr people, they, yeah, how can I speak? They knew how to send alcohol over to the Föhr people, because they knew Föhr people always liked to drink alcohol, and they had these duck on fur. There are very special ducks, and they're hunting these ducks, and they made like a conserve. I don't know English conserve. No, maybe you can say it. And on the half of this box, there was this duck inside, and on the other half, there was alcohol. So they
Okay.
can send it over to US. Yeah, the fur people knew if they buy this duck, they got alcohol as well. And I don't know if it's true. I heard this story once, and I think it's a very lovely story how the fur people thought about their family and friends over there. And on the other side, after the Second World War, for example, a lot of Frisian people in the US, they sent, packages back to fur, with coffee, with chocolate, with cigarettes, all that what you couldn't buy at that time in Germany. And if the fur people maybe don't want to use it, they could, on the other hand, change it to other stuff, because in Germany it was very, very, poor. Everything was destroyed, not in fur, but in Hamburg, for example, in Kiel, in Flensburg, in the bigger cities. So it was, that I heard stories of fur people who went with the stuff they got from the US to Hamburg, to change, coffee for grocery stuff.
Is there any intercultural aspect, either like on fur or in New York or the US in general, that you would like to mention? Is there anything we haven't touched?
I think a lot about it. When I think about it, I think no, maybe not. I couldn't. I have no idea.
Okay. If anything comes to mind later on, we can still circle back to it. So that's always okay. But then maybe we go over to the more present part. How is the migration history still commemorated on for today? How is it still present apart from the families living that connection? But how do they share it with maybe like also other parts of Germany? Like, is there, I don't know, something.
So we can say on fur to nowadays we have a lot of tourism, because we have lovely sandy beaches, and in the summertime a lot of German people came to make holiday on fur or on Amrum on Sylt. So nowadays we're living from tourism, but we're living on a very good quality from tourism. And this tourism began in the 1960s. And here you can see that this last big migration wave stopped when the tourism became bigger and bigger here. So because there wasn't economical a reason why you have to leave Föhr. And today we can see most of the young people, they have to leave the island because they want to go to study, or they want to go on and live on the mainland because this island is maybe too small. And a lot of them come back. But a lot are still living on the mainland because you can live here from tourism, but we don't have so huge different jobs here. Like you can become teacher, and then you have to work in a restaurant maybe for the tourism. So this is nowadays on fur. In the past, I think we have different areas in Germany where we have very huge number of migration. So I think in the middle German wooden areas you have very huge number of migration because they weren't on island, but they had very rural conditions as well. But here in the western part of Schleswig-Holstein, we have for Schleswig-Holstein the highest numbers of migration at that time. So this is still, I think still today you can see it because in the south of Germany, Bavaria, Baden-Württemberg, you have more companies, more other job possibilities. Or in the bigger cities. So this migration isn't that you migrate to the US, for example, but you migrate in Germany.
And circling back to the migration in the past, are there any like museums or you said like you can come into like the foundation to learn more about this part, or how is it preserved on the island?
On our island, we have a very, very nice, cozy museum. It's called the Frisian Museum. And there are different parts of the history of the nature of the island. And there is a little spot about the migration from fur to US. But you have in the bigger harbor cities, like in Hamburg, in Bremerhaven. At these places where the big boats went over with the migrants, you have wonderful museums. I think in Bremerhaven there is the German Migration Museum. It's very huge, it's very good. So it's a very, very good place to go. Very interesting. And I think they are still online and you can search after your relatives online or the German Migration Museum in Bremerhaven. You can make it as well if you write us to us an email, but we have more the fur people here.
Okay, that's cool. Do you think, or why do you think it's important to keep this transatlantic connection alive and like talk about it and like live through it?
Because it's a very cool story, I think. I think I love this story from leaving Föhr, a rural small island with houses where you don't need steps because they are so flat, to went to the biggest city in the world. And I think this is very cool to see how these people from this small island went to the biggest city. I love this picture. And I think it's very important for the identity of both the Frisian people in the US and the Frisian people on Föhr, which migrated or which had parents or grandparents which migrated. So this history is very still today, very lively. And if you talk to the older Frisian people here, nearly everybody can tell you something about US, New York, the family over there. Or even today, we have a lot, huge number of Frisian people who are talking once in the week to their relatives in the US, which are writing emails. You have on Facebook groups, which all these people who were connected to fur. I think this is very, it's a very interesting cultural thing because it was so long. It was about 150 year of migration. So it belongs to fur like beaches or like nature or like the whaling history or the old captain's history here.
Yeah, it's very much time history. It's still so much alive. You mentioned the podcast before. Maybe you want to tell a little more about that, or are there any other current projects or collaborations with institutions in the US that are like?
Not really. It's a pity, but I think so maybe it began today with new collaborations. Now we made this podcast with the German broadcasting company, but our wish, and it was only planned to make it in German and Frisian, but our wish was to make it in English because we thought a huge number of descendants from Frisian people maybe do not understand German or Frisian anymore. So it's important to share this history in English. Or I think it's a very good story. So I think a lot of people who maybe are descendants of my migration people, migrants, also can have a connection to this story. So I thought it was very important to make it in English. Yeah, we are very small, but maybe we can make something with US. I would be happy about it.
Yeah. So if you would have to describe the connection between the US and Föhr today in one sentence, what would it be?
Manhattan, probably. No, maybe personal family histories, because you cannot see it maybe directly, but this migration lives inside of the people here.
That
This
sounds
was
amazing.
more than one sentence, but I couldn't describe it
That's
shorter.
perfect. That's great. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add on or share that maybe came to mind throughout the interview?
I know that a lot of people who went to New York or to the US from Föhr, for example, wrote like diaries, or they had personal stuff or letters. And a lot of these letters or diaries maybe are still alive, so to speak, and lie home by the descendants. And for this, for example, it would be wonderful. We have a very huge archive here. If these materials could go back for later research, or for to preserve it for the future. So if anybody from a descendant from Frisian immigrants now listening, please send us ours your stuff. It would be a pleasure.
Yes, that would be great. So,
Yeah.
thank you for mentioning that. And thank you so much for meeting with me. It was so interesting and so nice to talk to you about the history and make the little collaboration to maybe give some more people an insight about the connection between Föhr and New York and the US in general. So, thank you so much for sharing history with me.
Yeah, thank you for your time, and it was a pleasure for me. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I'll stop the recording now.